Welcome to the UCB Theater Podcast for the week of March 28th, 2010. I'm John Frusciante, and sitting across from me is guest host Eric Tenoy.
Hello, thank you for having me on the podcast.
Thank you. You're talking in that very specific way that you promised to talk in before we started recording.
Yes, I'm speaking in my most stilted voice, trying to use as few conjunctions as possible, as if I am a robot.
Wonderful. All of those years of listening to podcasts are finally paying off. Will Hines is swimming in a pool full of gold this week, so he will not be here. But we are going to have Todd Bieber from UCB Comedy later on in the second segment to talk about the relaunch of UCBComedy.com. And then we're going to nerd out about a bunch of things after that, I suppose.
Yes, I'm very excited about the relaunch of UCBComedy.com.
Yeah, I am too. I've seen some previews.
The live videos from the theater are amazing to watch.
Yeah, so far they're great. And Todd is going to tell us how he works that magic. But first, let's talk about some of the shows you can see this week at the theater, which I'm told this is everybody's favorite part of the podcast, I'm told.
I've been pushing to lengthen this part of the podcast. I think a lot of people listen to the podcast but do not have internet access to read the schedule online.
It's not just about that. It's so that you can understand what shows are good. Not that they're not all good, but, you know, people aren't going to the theater enough.
So are the shows that we're mentioning the ones that have the lowest advanced reservations or the ones that we think are the best?
They're the ones that I just picked out of the air that I think are newer or special events that I think people should be aware of.
If you are a performer, not to drag this part out too long, if you're a performer and you hear your show mentioned in this segment, is that good or bad?
It's bad. You should sweat.
It means go flyer some more.
Yeah. Well, everybody listening to this should go flyer some more.
All right.
Even if you don't have a show, you should just hand out flyers for things. So Monday, which is today, we have the Rejection Show presents Bear With Me, which is John Friedman's new solo show.
John Friedman of the Rejection Show normally, and then this is a new version of it that is his one-person show that he's working on?
Yeah,
he
has completed it. He appealed to himself for funding and time to do this show. It's John Friedman's show. He's a hilarious guy. He does some really funny bits and talks about some stuff in this show.
And is this the debut of the show?
No, it is not.
Okay.
It's the second. I think it's the second time.
Great. So he's worked out the kink. So if you didn't see it before, definitely check it out.
Yeah, it's safe. I know a lot of people were like, that's the first time. I'm not going.
Yeah. Tuesday, March 30th, Michael Patrick O'Brien's Shatter at 7 p.m. Michael Patrick O'Brien is a writer for Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
Comes to us via Chicago.
Yeah. And this is his solo show that he did out in Chicago, where he tries to break some randomly selected world record while also doing some telling some stories and jokes and things like that.
Great. So you could see history happen on the stage.
You probably will.
End up in the Guinness Book of World Records.
You could say you were a part of it.
Like if you were there when those two fat guys in the motorcycle rode by.
Yeah, that's
it,
right.
It would be something similar to that. You could tell your children about. Then Friday, April 2nd, Conversations with Deb at 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm. This is like a new sketch. It's not quite a sketch show, not quite a solo show, but this woman, Deb, she has worked in the entertainment industry for a long time and a lot of like PA jobs and things like that. So she has a lot of interesting stories of people that she's worked with or people that she's gone on dates with and things like that. So this is sort of a recounting through sketch comedy of the conversations that she's had. It's an interesting show.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
You should be.
Directed by Kevin Hines.
Yes.
Who has talked about it to me in a way that makes me interested in seeing it.
Really? And what way is that? Is that like a specific kind of...
He described the sort of format in which it was staged. referencing the Awesome Factory show by Aaron Bergeron, which you may have seen at the UCB Theater back when it was at the Chelsea Playhouse. So I think that's... He claimed that he stole all of his directing techniques from that show.
It's a good place to steal them from.
And that show is paired with Mace Bacon, The Worst Guy Ever.
So yeah, which is
two
a great
shows
show.
For the price of one.
Yeah, that show has been kicking ass since it debuted. Okay, so that's what's coming up this week at the UCB Theater, and we'll be right back with Todd Bieber of UCBComedy.com. Welcome back to the UCB Theater Podcast. We're here with Todd Bieber of UCBComedy.com. Hello,
hey.
Todd.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Todd is the first repeat guest of the podcast.
Yes, that's right. A landmark occasion here on the UCB Comedy podcast.
I can only assume he was invited back because his previous podcast had the most downloads of any podcast.
Yeah, we saw a real spike in listenership after your first appearance.
Yeah.
A lot of fan mail, people talking about your sexy voice, wanting to know what you sounded like. Wanting to know what you looked like based on how you sound.
Mm-hmm. I dressed up.
Those are listeners with no internet access who have somehow found the podcast.
Oh, boy.
I think we're going to record this bit again, perhaps?
No, we'll be fine. You know, it's expected.
That is Todd Bieber's phone call. He's already getting calls.
Yeah, that's probably somebody who's like, oh, thank God you're back on the podcast.
Hey, this is a live call-in show.
Sorry.
I can hear you on the UCB podcast.
Okay. That would be amazing.
I understand that UCBcomedy.com is relaunching on April 1st, right?
That's right. A whole new website, a whole lot of new content, a lot of new features on the site, completely new design of the site. We're trying to, you know, have it look more modern and have more modern features and things like that. It was a nice website before, but now, we looked at what other sites that are providing video are doing. And we start to do those things. So it's going to be pretty different than before.
I'm going to channel my computer programming job from before I worked here at the Upright Citizens Brigade. We're going to have some Web 2.0 features.
Yeah, there's going to be some Web 2.0 features. I don't even know what that means.
Some social networking devices. If you see a video that you like, there's something you can click on to load it to Twitter or to Facebook.
Yeah, you fell into Tanoi's trap. He just wanted you to ask him what that meant so that he can explain it.
There's going to be that feature.
So those are great for getting those videos distributed or sharing them with your friends.
Yep. I think Dig and Reddit. All of those things.
I guess so, yeah. I guess we'll be digging and tweeting things.
Yes. Yeah. Yahoo Buzz, will that be available?
Yahoo Buzz. You mean Google Buzz?
No, there was a feature called Yahoo Buzz for a while.
It was an
attempt to cash in on the success of Dig, but with a Yahoo spin on it. I think it still exists, but is not as popular as Dig.
There is no buzz behind it.
Yeah. So there will be, I assume, message boards and comments and things like that.
Yeah, comments. And then the other big thing that we're going to do is you'll be able to rate videos. So there'll be it's called a bucket of truth. I don't know if you're familiar with the Bucket of Truth.
Yes, the classic UCB sketch show reference. You look into the Bucket of Truth and you see the truth, essentially. Yeah.
So you can add or take away from the Bucket of Truth, essentially. And, things that rise and get a lot of truth, I don't know. Plus, if you put a plus sign, you add to the bucket. And if you put a minus sign, you take away from the bucket. So hopefully it'll be a way to let the cream rise to the top. Because there's not really a way to do that right now on the current site. Like, there's no rating system. So this will be kind of fun to see what people really are into. And then other people will be able to come and see what everybody's into.
That's great because the current UCB comedy website looks so much better than the previous UCB comedy website. Yeah. It was a huge leap forward. So I can only imagine how big of a leap forward this redesign is going to be.
I hope it's big. I think people will really like it. I'm really excited, especially for the beta teams, because now they're going to be much more prominently featured on the site. Mm-hmm. Whereas the site now, you kind of have to click through about 3 or 4 different buttons to find a beta video if they're not featured that day. Uh-huh. Now there will always be a beta video, 3 beta videos featured prominently on the site. And then if there used to be comedy original videos by beta teams, those will also be featured in addition to that. So there's just things right now on the site kind of, once they're off the main page, kind of disappear. And we see on our end, the numbers just drop off dramatically once they're off that main page. So we wanted a way to get our stuff that's really good to continue to be featured, but at the same time not look crazy and ugly and stuff.
That's pretty smart. How much room is there going to be for my lip-syncing Neil Sedaka videos? Because I noticed they're not really getting a lot of hits.
Yeah, we set aside a terabyte, and it's going to be a shortcut from UCBcomedy.com to UCBcomedy.com/Neil Sedaka, John Frusciante.
Mm-hmm. Lip-syncing videos.
Lip-syncing video. Mm-hmm. You'll just be able to type that in, not be able to type in I think it's a long strand of numbers and letters now.
Yeah, currently it is. It's a lot of stuff I don't understand. But there's tildes and things in there. Yeah.
Again, if you can use these Web 2.0 features, you can get a tiny URL to go right to John Frusciante lip-syncing Neil Sedaka videos.
I'm going to go to bit.ly and shorten that link.
Yeah.
So I think you've already talked about this a little, but some of the new types of videos, right? The live from the theater videos.
Yeah, yeah. We have a ton of live stuff going up. We filmed like the weekend teams. We filmed Code Duello. Who else did we film? Bunch of stuff. Like, there's just a lot of cool videos coming out from that. And then we also have the Blackout videos, which I think I talked about last time, but we actually filmed a handful of them. So we have a bunch of those going up. The thing that's going to be kind of cool is series. We have some series going up. So there are things that are going to release like every 1 or 2 weeks and kind of like comedy mini series in a way, because some of them have like a definite beginning and end. And what else do we have? Let me think. The documentaries.
The documentary.
Yeah, the documentary is probably like the thing I'm excited about. One of the most. I got to interview Bobby Moynihan, Kay Cannon from 30 Rock, and Joe Randazzo, who's the editor and writer of the Onion newspaper. And I just got to pick their mind, sort of like what this podcast does, about you know, comedy and their role in comedy, like either their like SNL's role and then 30 Rock's role and then the Onion's role, and like how what their creative process is like individually and then as a group. And it's, like I said, it's sort of like this podcast, but then you get to cut out all the crap that you don't want to hear.
Which I refuse to do, even though Will is constantly imploring me to let him cut the crap out.
So I would assume that this website will be a great place for people who are at work and bored and want to just watch a bunch of funny videos of differing lengths. Like, oh, I have a meeting in 5 minutes. Let me watch a short Blackout. Or I've got all day. I'm going to watch this web series all the way through.
Yeah.
Or aspiring comedians who are interested in the craft of comedy of, oh, I wonder, you know, what Bobby Moynihan did, how he got started, or what it's like to write for 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Or people who do not live in the vicinity of either the New York or L.A. theater and are like, I wonder what goes on there. I've heard a lot about it. I read about it on A Special Thing or something like that.
Yep.
I can watch clips of shows from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also for people who are coming to the website, for instance, and they click on a show and they say, like, what's this show like? We can embed some of those clips in those show pages.
Yep.
So they can get a little tease and watch a little bit of it and say, oh, that show's funny. I'm going to go to it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I hope to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, there's already a bunch of websites out there doing sketch stuff. And so I wanted to try and figure out what we had that, like, College Humor or Funny or Die or The Onion doesn't have access to. And the theater and the people doing stuff at the theater are two big things that we have. So, like, to just sit down and talk with them is something that I've always wanted to do. Like, I've always wanted to sit down and talk with Bobby Moynihan about, like, you know, how he got on SNL and, you know, what he did for that 10 years of doing comedy that led up to that. So this is my chance to do it, and then I get to record it, and, like, hopefully other people get to do it. Like, kind of hear what I thought was cool about it. And then also the theater stuff is just, like, it's already there. We're already doing it. Why not get it out there and show it to people? And, like, the hits are really, really, really coming up. I was afraid that people wouldn't have, like, the tolerance to sit through, like, a 7-minute Adsit and Gausis video. But, like, it's so good that, like, even though the average time that someone spends watching a video is, like, 4 minutes statistically, no one watches things longer than 4 minutes. But when it's really good, you know, that's when you watch something that's funny. So
Yeah. And the thing I've been most impressed with as just somebody who watches the videos occasionally is the change in terms of editing the videos and then multi-camera stuff that really makes a huge difference from watching a 10-minute unedited clip that starts in darkness with loud applause that's hurting your eardrums.
Yeah, and everything's super bright. Yeah. Everybody looks like ghosts on stage, and everything is muffled, and you hear the audience laughing and coughing more than you hear the moves that are being made.
Yeah, and then just, you know, trimming a few minutes and adding some better camera angles and miking it a little differently, it just makes a world of difference.
Yeah, well, there's a guy who is an intern here, and I use the term intern loosely because the people that are working for UCB Comedy, like, doing internships are, like, professional people, and they're just doing it because they love UCB theater and comedy. And Alex used to work for Pitchfork Media and record, like, live events for Pitchfork Media. And so he came in, he's like, I love comedy, but I haven't gotten a chance to work in comedy yet. And I was like, this is perfect. You know, he just, like, came in and, like, knew how to record live events. And so, like, he and I sat down and, like, figured it out and hooked up a bunch of mics, and we nerded out about it. And I'm really happy with most of the results. So
that's great.
So if I'm a person listening to this podcast and I am very excited about the relaunch of UCB Comedy, is there anything I can do, or...
Well, April 1st, I really hope that like everybody in the community like gets on Facebook and Twitter and just like says you know this new site is up, you guys should check it out. And there's so many people involved in it, like just that through writer, there's a bunch of writer new writing things, there's people who directed things, people who acted in things, crew members that like a ton of people are already involved that are in this community. So hopefully they just promote it like crazy.
I think that's what people will do. I think that I think people will be getting on, like you said, getting on all the Web 2.0
things. Web 2.0 features.
And talking about it and getting it out there. I mean, the site looks so great, and people are already clearly watching a lot of the videos, and people clearly give a shit about this website and are seeing it as something that can provide them with entertainment. So I'm sure as soon as it drops, people will be spreading the word.
Yes, or to sound more business-like, we hope to grow our business through corporate synergy starting on April 1st.
I'm already asleep.
Well, that was what the original press release said, and I had to change it.
Yeah, Tanoi reads all the press releases that we get from guests, and I just throw them in the garbage because I'm rogue.
Will, I have a question. Will there be any features on UCBComedy.com for people who do not have internet access?
No.
Okay.
You won't be sending telegrams to people, like funny little telegrams?
VHS cassettes of videos?
If I get a letter in the mail, like if someone sends me an actual letter, I would do what I could to get. So
people, send them a transcript of like,
a transcript,
the interview with Sabi Moynihan.
I'd send them a DVD. I'd show up at their door
screen
with something.
Screen captures on paper, printed out screen captures.
Yeah.
Like a flip book.
Yeah.
You could make a flip book of a UCB.
You know, when a museum has like a retrospective of an artist, they'll publish a coffee table book, which is no substitute for going to the museum and seeing the actual works of art in the show. But it's a nice souvenir. So
yeah, if you don't have museum access,
you can still get the book.
I can make this offer only because this podcast is solely heard online. So that means that no one would ever hear this offer.
No, I sent a flip book to somebody in Missouri just last week, a flip book of this podcast.
Oh, really? I am fucked.
John spends all week dubbing cassettes of the podcast and leaving them around town.
Mixtapes of old like 90s emo music. A lot of Pop Unknown and bands like that, and also put clips of the podcast.
Nice.
A lot of Promise Ring songs and podcast clips.
So I have another video question. You may have already discussed this in the previous podcast. I only listened to part of it. you know, comedy web videos versus sketch comedy videos. Is that that's something you already talked about?
No, we didn't really.
No,
is that something you're interested in talking about?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that because it's something that's like it's difficult. I mean. I think when we first started out, we were taking videos, we were taking sketch writing stuff that came straight from the stage, and then we put it on video. Mm-hmm. And that didn't always work because stuff that translate just nails it on stage doesn't necessarily like go over great on web because there's two different formats.
Yeah, sometimes it's just the energy of it being live will get you points that you don't get on video.
Exactly.
Or the pacing is different.
Yeah, and I think one thing that we're trying to do is find projects that are specific to video. And that might mean like translating something, like we're writing something right now, there's something that's coming through the writing pipeline that's like was originally a stage show, but is now translated into a movie trailer. And it's a way to hit the beats, but then change locations and actually put the things in action in different locations that were maybe just referenced or talked about in the stage show, and then put it into like this video format. Because like the thing with video is you can show everything that you talk about in the video. So, you know, it's definitely a learning curve, especially when something goes over so well on stage. You don't want to change it because did so well, but it just doesn't always translate. So
sure,
yeah. And do you find there's things that you can get away with on stage? I'm thinking in terms of costumes. Like somebody comes out on stage with just a crown on and holding a fake sword, the audience will buy into, oh, this person is a knight. Whereas when you record that on video, if they're wearing a Burger King crown and holding a wooden sword, they look like a moron.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You need to have that that authenticity, right?
Yeah.
Or else the audience will say, like, why is that person wearing a Burger King crown and holding a stick?
I mean, one of my hugest pet peeves, like, personally, is watching someone who's 20-something play someone who's 50-something. Not on stage. On stage, I'll laugh hysterically. But when it's in video, like, a child character needs to be played by a child, and like an old person needs to be played by an old person, and like you have the ability to do that more easily in video, and it's going to be more widely seen. It's just more believable. There's just like a believability factor that makes the comedy much more. I don't know.
So here's a question then, because you here at UCB Comedy, and we here who have access to the stuff. And any beta teams and things like that have resources to get a child or an old person or, you know, costumes and things like that. But
often, yes, often in the office I hear somebody saying, "I need to get a child." And somebody's like, I can take care of
that.
Well,
it's usually John.
It's usually me. But a lot of people don't have access to the kinds of things that we have access to here. You know, they don't have access to even a decent person who will edit things.
Yeah.
But they might not know how to get... you know, a good costume for cheap, or know how to get access to, some kind of character that they might need. Or maybe they're just too lazy to do it. I don't know. Maybe that's probably more of the thing of what it is. But, like, how could people like that, what's an easy way to get stuff like that? Or what advice do you have for people like that?
Well, I guess come to UCB. But that's true, though. Like, you have to start to find people. Like, if you can't find that stuff, if you can't do it yourself, then you've got to go out there and just go to a place where that stuff exists. I mean, I was that way before I came to UCB. I wanted to make comedy videos, but I wasn't, like, hanging out with a lot of comedy actors and friends and things like that. So I started taking classes at UCB. You know, that's not the only place to do it. I mean, you could also just go on Craigslist and be like, people around UCB here, like, when we have stuff, we're like, we need an old man, but, like, we need a really old man, and there's not necessarily really, really old men around UCB Theater. So we go on Craigslist and just put an ad on, or you make phone calls. I don't know how many times I've called Rob Casey, who's recently had a baby, to use his baby and things. So, I mean, it's just calling up people. I think it's easy to not do those things, and it's really hard to do those things. So... when people know that they can take the easier way, that's just what happens. So it's
on the other side of that. Let's say I'm listening to this podcast and I'm an older person or a young child who's too young to take improv classes, but I want to be involved in the comedy scene. Is this a way in? Like, I know in the past it's always felt like the UCB is sometimes sort of this monolithic endeavor that you have to get on a Herald team or on a House team to even be involved. But I feel like with this, it's sort of opening things up a bit more to be like, you know, I'm too young to take classes, but you need a child for this video. You know, how can people get involved or make themselves known?
Yeah, I mean, how can people get involved? That's a good question. I mean, like, for like this last video that I shot, I think like half the people were maybe on Herald teams, and then half the people were just people who I met in like level one, and maybe even haven't taken above a level one class, but they like I met them in UCB. So it's like, I'm not the only one making videos. There's a lot of other people making videos, so it's just a matter of getting here and not necessarily, you know, like you said, working your way up to being on a house team, but just showing that you can be a good actor, because acting in these videos is probably more important than improvisation, because, you know, we don't necessarily need a great improviser for a video.
Sure. So it's just coming around and getting yourself known. Showing up.
Yeah, it really is. It's showing up and showing that you have some kind of ability and some kind of desire to do it, and like that's what gets me excited. I mean, and then I get those people involved. So, and I'm sure everybody works that way.
Yeah.
What are? Here's a question again for people listening who are not necessarily in New York. Do you have any tips or things about, like, let's say I want to make a video and I've written it and I call some friends. What are things I should know going in? What are ways that I can make it easier for my friends or my family members who have volunteered to help out with this video so that they don't spend 8 hours, you know, complaining and sitting in the hot sun?
Yeah, this is advice that I give and I get. I've heard a million times, but like the best thing that you can do is feed everyone. You spend like $20 feeding someone, and like you will be amazed how much longer their patience holds out. Because like showing up with donuts, like the other day I showed up with donuts and coffee to a set. It was a very long, hard day, but you could just tell, like even the people that didn't drink coffee knew that I thought like I want to give them something so that they are like that I'm paying attention to them, because I don't pay attention to them half the day because I'm worried about what's going on. Mm-hmm. So just showing that you care about the people, and sometimes it's more than just saying thanks for coming, it's like actually giving them a little something to like nibble on or drink.
Yeah.
So
people need that.
Yeah, and it's also like you get tired and hungry on set, so you want to provide that just as a nice human being.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. I think that's probably the biggest one.
So it's give Grandpa coffee.
Yeah, it's so easy. I mean, and then just like pre-production. Plan. Like, you know your script and know your angles. Meet with people beforehand. Rehearse if you can. All that stuff. And then the shoot. There's going to be 8 billion things that come up that you never expect. And so the more planning you do, the more likely it is to be successful.
What about things like, this may seem obvious, but just throw it out there, like scheduling, not everyone to show up at the same time, right? Like if you have 4 different actors who aren't in the same scene,
yeah,
they don't all need to get there. And or they should show up later than perhaps the crew who has to set up all the cameras and lights, if there's cameras and lights.
Yeah, I never have the crew and the actors show up at the same time. I always have the crew show up at least an hour before the actors get there, because if not, we're going to be like, we usually eat into the actors' time as well. Just setting some stuff up and getting our shit together. So
yeah, you don't want a bunch of crybaby namby pamby actors showing up and being
tell me about it.
When are we gonna start?
I worked with Lil Hines the other day.
Oh God, okay. That guy, prima donna.
It was terrible.
Yeah, that guy constantly has to have a mouthful of donuts and fists full of coffee, or else forget it.
Yeah,
and he doesn't get out of character in between scenes. So if you have him playing like a 40-year-old dad in a video, he keeps talking about his kid in between takes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if you have him playing a 40-year-old like washed-up person, mm-hmm. he continually does it.
Yeah. Or if you have him like playing like a 40-year-old like guy who's going grocery shopping.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's talking just constantly doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never ends.
Can we? I don't know how much time we have. Can we nerd out and geek talk a bit? Or did you already cover this? Like software, things like that, again, for somebody who's looking to start making videos. Is this what you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about something else?
No, I can talk about this. I mean, whatever you guys want to talk about. I mean, software stuff. I mean, Final Cut Pro. I think we talked about it a little bit last time.
But that's right. I did. I asked you,
I'm not, like, a huge nerd about that stuff.
Because you don't need to get Final Cut Pro if you can't afford it.
No. I mean, like, you can get iMovie if you can use it. And, like, you can use, like, just about anything there that's out there. You can use a really crappy camera if you have a really good script and a really good performer. You know, the more good stuff that you have, obviously the better it's going to turn out. So, but like, don't feel like you need to do
people,
good stuff.
Yeah, people will watch a video of your child crying for 5 minutes, even if you filmed it on your phone.
Yes.
Entertaining.
Or lip-syncing Neil Sedaka videos.
People won't watch that.
I feel like people can't get to it. They don't have the right access to it. That's why I'm excited
April
for the
1st.
Relaunch.
April 1st.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to having my own page.
Yes.
So is there anything else we need to know about UCBComedy.com?
No, just that it's relaunching April 1st and that you guys should all go there and check it out.
We're still going to have a lot of great...
This is not any kind of prank also, because April 1st is April Fool's Day.
Yeah, we decided to do April 1st like because it's April Fool's Day. It's not a prank, but like we were thinking like people are going to be looking for funny things that day. Mm-hmm. And why not have a lot of funny stuff and like kind of ride on that coattail. So
smart.
Yeah, hopefully it works.
And there's still going to be the message board and things like that for people to communicate with each other and find out about classes and get information about video shoots and things like that.
So the message boards will still be there at boards.ucbcomedy.com in case people want to comment or talk about videos they've seen or anything like that.
Yeah, I actually printed off some of my favorite comments.
Oh, great.
Wonderful.
Comments
everybody
from
loves
videos that are online already.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
These are some from like YouTube and from UCB Comedy.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Let's see. This is one of my favorites. LOL, I'm sad now.
What?
So they were laughing out loud for a moment.
Yeah.
And
then became sad.
Then they were sad, yeah.
Great, so that person is a...
manic depressive?
Yeah, or manic depressive. Yeah. A real fulcrum of emotions.
But really instantaneous. Like in the matter of 4 dots, 4 periods, they switch to being sad.
So I would assume they're mostly sad all the time. That video, for a brief moment, made them happy, and then they return to their normal sad
state. Yeah.
Or maybe they're allergic to creating ellipses.
And that made them sad?
Yeah. Well,
it's not LOL dot dot dot, I'm itchy now.
Well, you know, I mean, it's just itching isn't the only symptom of an allergy. You know?
Sadness is not.
Yeah, well, it could
be. I can't eat almonds. They make me sad.
It could be like a psychological kind of thing where you have an. It's like people.
Seasonal.
Like people who take drugs or drink alcohol, like the part.
I don't know if that's an
I'm
allergy.
Allergic to heroin. It makes me nod off.
Part of the allergy of it. This is what they say, that it has an effect on the brain. Is what I'm saying. If you read your psychology, anyway, forget it. I withdraw the argument.
All right. Here's another one. There's a couple. This was in regards to a 9/11 video that we did.
Oh boy.
It says. Good fuck America, 9/11, all day fucking dirty American scumbags. I'm glad 9/11 happened. Fuck every American people and fuck all the dirty hookers.
Well, bad grammar. I mean, that's the most offensive part to me.
Yeah.
And just a lot of, like, just trying to ram his agenda down.
Was the last line, fuck dirty hookers?
Yeah.
So
all
of
them.
Is he advocating
that? Just the dirty ones. No, he's mad because he prefers clean hookers.
Oh,
he or she prefers clean hookers.
Yeah. Here, let's see.
Trying to say a bunch of, trying to use our comment thing as a platform for getting his message out there.
No, this one is my personal favorite. It's after we did a Tim Tebow parody ad that I directed and Craig Rowan wrote. Mm-hmm. And it says, Rowan and Bieber took 50 seconds out of their ass orgy to make this piece of shit. LOL, they should have continued fornicating each other and saved their time.
Mm-hmm. So why the disrespect, do you think, towards your ass orgy?
I don't know. Evidently, and let me tell you something. It took us more than 50 seconds. Because, you know, it doesn't just take the time to watch a video to make a video. So we took a lot of time out of our ass orgy.
You had to stop your ass orgy, call Rob Casey and ask if his child was available.
Yeah.
Film the video. Put it up. Then get back to your ass orgy.
Exactly.
Is that a guy that you did not invite to your ass orgy? Is that the problem?
Maybe
he's been out of shape about it?
Yeah.
Because your ass orgies are legendary.
Yeah.
I was expecting the comment to be somehow related to the politics of the video, but it seemed unaware that there was a political angle to that video.
And no.
More interested in...
More offended at the quality of it.
Yeah. It was... Maybe they were, you know, upset that we took time out. Maybe they were at the ass orgy.
Uh-huh.
Offended
that
we took...
Disappeared.
Yeah.
Maybe they were just about to finish.
Yeah.
And then you guys just got up... Walked out of the room to go shoot your silly video.
Exactly.
I also like that they were polite enough to use fornicating instead of fucking, but were fine with ass orgy.
Yes.
Well, this is a revelation for me because I didn't realize people that commented on the internet were such assholes.
No, it's true. They are. For those people that are listening that aren't on the internet right now, they should know that a lot of assholes are on the internet.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's a good reason to stay away from it.
Yes.
Well, hopefully those people will keep contributing absolutely nothing to the greater good of society.
Hey, we've got like a lot of space for comments on our site, and I look forward to more of these.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the future we should also highlight good comments, because now we're just encouraging these people to get on, talk about ass orgies.
Oh, yeah, no, this is not going to be a regular segment on the podcast, so don't put your stupid little comments in and think that we're going to read them like it's some kind of shout-out.
It's a it's like our favorite five horrible comments of the week.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not Gothamist, okay? Okay, well, thank you, Todd. You've been lovely.
Thanks. Thanks for allowing me to curse so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And we'll see you on April 1st at the debut of UCBComedy.com.
I look forward to it.
http://www.ucbcomedy.com/web2.0
All right, thanks, Todd. And we'll be right back with more UCB Theater Podcast. Okay, welcome back to the UCB Theater Podcast. Once again, my special guest is Eric Tenoy this week.
Hello.
This is the segment of the show where we nerd out about improv things. We are going to talk about, we decided it'd be fun to talk about starting scenes, the way that you start an improv scene, either from a suggestion or from a premise or receiving somebody's initiation. I know I like to go out in there. I'm a big fan of like trying to get my idea out as soon as possible, even if it's like hitting my scene partner over the head with what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. I think one reason for that is because if you have what you feel is like a pretty strong game or premise idea, and you only get half of it out, you can't reuse that idea later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like, oh, we started that scene about the robots. Like, now I can't do that initiation later. So you want to get it all the way out there. Or, you know, hold on to it for later. But
yeah.
If you get it halfway out, then it's kind of the worst of both worlds. Because you don't do that scene you wanted to do, but you can't use it again later.
Yeah, and you've kind of taken a step backwards from your good intentions. Because you had an idea of, like, this clear premise and fun idea. But you only got half of it out, so your scene partner didn't get it. And so now you're kind of starting from half an idea kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Though there's also just general initiation etiquette sorts of behavior in terms of, like, are you playing with people you know and you kind of have a sense of, like, oh, that person's got something versus is this a jam and you've never played with somebody, so you're going to make a big decision so that they know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that the longer that I play with people, maybe you found this too, like, the more you can just kind of step forward and look at someone and know, like, oh, they've got something and I know what they are going to have, or vice versa. You know, you step out and, like, say something, and immediately that person knows, oh, we're going for this kind
of
thing.
I found lately I've been neglecting the object work and environmental elements of initiations.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that Will Hines has been pushing lately in practices and on his website. But to make sure that you're not just saying a funny thing, but that you're giving some pretense of, like, oh, the scene takes place somewhere. You know, these are actual people. So sometimes I'll find myself, I'll have gotten through an initiation in the first two lines and we haven't done anything like that. So then I'll be like, well, let me grab this coffee mug here. Again, even if it's very minor, but it's like, okay, I guess we're at work or we're near a counter. Little things like that can help.
Yeah, I forget to do that stuff too sometimes. I think sometimes when I have a premise in mind, I want to get it out instead of taking that time to do object work at the top of the scene. But if you're coming into a scene with half an idea, like just from a one-word suggestion, it surprises me how much I don't see people doing that sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily on Harold Knight, but in, like, class shows that I've seen or things like that. I think it's easily forgettable,
yeah.
You know, and I know I certainly forget to do about it.
Something else that I'm self-conscious of and try not to be, but I always find myself thinking about it, is the moment when somebody else initiates, you are kind of, you become a little bit of a blank slate to be like, what are they initiating? How can I respond to that? And then your awareness that, like, oh, I'm not doing anything right now. So in 2 seconds, I'm going to realize what they're doing and, like, turn into a clown. And will the audience be like, wait a second, for those first 2 seconds, he wasn't a clown.
Yeah.
But I always tell students, like, they won't. They know that you're improvising, so that you'll have a few seconds to, like, listen to what's going on, figure out where you are, and mm-hmm. then react. So you don't have to worry that, like, oh, you kind of seemed, you had a different posture for a few seconds at the top of the scene. It's like you can get into it then and
mm-hmm.
become a hunchback, and then you're a hunchback of the scene. And no one's going to, at the end of that scene, be like, wow, there was that weird 2 seconds where he wasn't a hunchback at the beginning of the
yeah,
scene.
Yeah, this is not reality.
Yeah.
What is happening? Also, another thing that's interesting is, like, when you come out and you have an idea for something and then your scene partner, like, if I came out and I was a hunchback,
mm-hmm.
and then you initiated with something that, like, it seemed like I should no longer be a hunchback. If I give up my choice hunchback. Of being a hunchback, then, like, I've given up the idea of that scene becoming something really cool where I was a hunchback.
Yeah,
responding to whatever your initiation was.
And some of that is the sort of initiation etiquette. It is like, if I step out first and it looks like I'm clearly doing something, then you might want to hold off on your hunchback.
Sure.
Because you're like, oh, Eric has a premise idea. If I kind of come out and I'm just doing something for a while but don't say anything, then mm-hmm. you might want to come out as a hunchback, or if it's one of those accidents where we both step out at the same time.
Right, but I won't drop my hunchback idea because I need to play hunchbacks in every thing.
Every scene. They're fun.
Yeah.
They're funny characters. and then I had another idea about this that I wanted to mention, which was, I feel like a lot of times in discussing scenes and getting notes, we focus so much on the verbal that people ignore the nonverbal cues also. That, like, if somebody starts a scene and has a clear sort of posture, even if they don't say something, it's like, oh, that person seems like perhaps they're in the military or something like that. They're standing up very straight. You don't want to initiate a scene that ignores that, even though they haven't said, you know, attention, soldier. But they have a certain sort of posture.
Mm-hmm.
As their scene partner, you have to be aware of that, even if it wasn't verbally said.
Yeah.
Kind of being aware of physical posturing or the sort of characteristics that they're taking on that are nonverbal that are still a part of the scene and a part of the initiation.
Mm-hmm.
So just in the same way that you wouldn't deny a verbal initiation of, like, oh, that mountain is pretty, there's no mountain, that same sort of thing can happen with the nonverbal things of, like, somebody pretends to be climbing a mountain. If you don't pretend that there's a mountain there that they're climbing, you're doing the exact same thing.
Right, so that's a big part of, like, listening and being observant of somebody and checking in with your scene partner
yeah.
at the top to make sure that
I get
to
worried.
See if whether they have something or not.
Because we say listening, but we also mean that, like, that's also seeing and just being a part of it. But I think we always use the term, like, make sure you're listening at the top of the scene. That also means make sure you're watching.
Right. That doesn't just mean, like, bound off the back line with blinders on and think, like, I'm going to say whatever I want to say, whether or not somebody on the other side of the stage has something or not. Mm-hmm. What about post-editing initiation etiquette?
Okay, well, first of all, you should never feel that you have to initiate right after the edit. Like, edit the scene because it's time to edit the scene. Mm-hmm.
Because there are some people who will say that you should.
Those people are wrong. I feel very strong about that. I mean, if you're watching a scene that needs to be edited, even if you don't have an idea or you're not in the next scene, go ahead and edit that scene. That scene needs to be edited. Mm-hmm. Then I think you do have the right of way to initiate first. Like, if you edited it, you get the best chance to go out there and initiate. But mm-hmm. if you don't, then anyone can step out there and do it.
Like, if you do have an idea and you edit a scene, then you should not go all the way to the back line. You should edit enough so people that know that the scene is edited and then kind of step back on stage and give your initiation line quick. And if you're the other people on the team, you should watch that person to make sure that they are not going to be initiating an idea, right?
Yes, because I mean, what happens sometimes, it's not the worst scene in the world, but like you have what you think is a good idea, you don't want to edit it because you want to step out and initiate it, right? Or somebody else edits it, you go out and do your scene, that person who edited like doesn't get to do the scene that they wanted to do now, even though they did the more important thing, which was edit the previous scene.
Right. Yeah. Well, you've answered that question.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, and then with if you're initiating from... you know, because there's a big difference between initiating with a premise and half an idea. I think if you initiate from a word, obviously you shouldn't be obligated to use that word in any kind of way.
Correct.
But you should be making some kind of strong choice at the top of the scene that gets us somewhere, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, if the suggestion is grapefruit, you don't want to necessarily start a scene just eating a grapefruit because that doesn't get you very far. But
right.
if grapefruit makes you think of the Florida citrus industry and then, you know, land schemes and the Great Depression, then you could do that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think another thing we sort of touched on is if you're initiating a scene with half an idea, try to make it clear. Like, occasionally you'll see players who, when they're initiating just a half idea, they make it seem like they have a bigger idea or a premise, and so then the other person waits because it's like, oh, they've got something.
Yeah.
And then they don't have anything. Mm-hmm. So if you aren't initiating with a really full, strong premise idea, don't do that thing where you kind of let your sentence trail off, but it sounds like you might say more. Like, just make it firm, crisp, like, we're out of milk. Don't do that. We're out of milk. The store, I went to the store, because then it sounds like I found the
I'm
other improviser.
Fumbling for a game.
Yeah, but if I'm the other person, I'm like, oh, he's got something. He's just having trouble getting it out, so
right.
I'll just let him go for a long time.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and
be precise.
That's a disaster.
Yes, because then no one's making choices. So try not to make it seem like you have an idea if you don't.
And that's a good opportunity when you don't necessarily have an idea to use some of that object work, to just come out and assume some kind of posture or be doing some kind of object work or make a choice about how you're going to feel about your scene partner no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a perfectly fair thing to do when we step out for... To improvise a scene where we don't have a premise that we're initiating from is make a big choice, choose what status you are, choose what emotion you're going to be feeling about your scene partner. You know, that's something that I've certainly done before.
Yeah, how
right?
do you, what's your relationship? And not just, you know, we're father and son, but like, how do you feel about your father? Or are you friends? Are you getting along? All that sort of information.
Yeah, because a lot of the stuff that we teach in our classes, I think I've talked about this but we can use it as, like, tools, you know, to stick in our tool belt of, like, oh, well, I don't have anything, so I'll just choose a status or I'll make a big emotional choice or something like that.
Yes. That reminds me of some things I'll give away here. These are some secrets and tricks that I have.
Here we go.
This is I generally will use this. This will be, like, third beat or end of a montage when you're out of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But it's time to start a new scene.
Uh-huh.
So one thing that I will do, you may have seen me do this, is I will pull a chair out of stage, put my leg up on the chair. It first of all, doing that saves you. It gives you some time. You gain a few seconds, so it's like, okay, something's going on, rather than have just people hovering on the back line. It gives me a bit of status, so I feel like, oh, I'm doing something. I'm a man with my foot up on a chair, which I think is important during that part of the show when you're sometimes nervous as a group, or kind of like no one has ideas. You don't want the audience to see that sort of like that sweat or that sort
of
uncertainty.
Hesitation.
So playing a character who is very certain and high status and willing to put his foot up on a chair, even if I have no idea what else is going on in the scene, it just that gives me that sort of thing. I'll also start driving. That's another one. Again, you buy a few seconds, you get in the car.
Right.
And then you're moving, you're doing something active.
Mm-hmm.
You can figure out what's happening.
And the person behind the wheel has power, so those are two kind of high stakes.
But to the audience, it looks like, oh, they're doing something on purpose. Mm-hmm. And you can possibly drive by any characters or scenes you need to at some point. Binoculars were one for all. Kevin Hines has talked about this in different forms. I used to start scenes just looking through binoculars at something, which seems like a bad idea because you're talking about something else now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that people using binoculars tend to be in situations where they're really interested in what's going on. You know, if you're at a fort and people are attacking,
mm-hmm.
even though you're talking about these enemies who are off stage, it's still going to be an active scene. You're getting ready for to be attacked. Or I guess if you're bird watching, I tended to do fewer bird watching scenes. Mm-hmm. But anything where I can start a scene with purpose, even if I'm faking it, will help me get through that end of the show part where you're like, I need to make something happen.
So you like to make some kind of big, specific choice about what you're doing or put yourself in some kind of situation where you're invested in what's going on.
Yes, and to have high status. I will make the character have some sort of high status or self-confidence that I, as an improviser, might not have. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that will also kind of tell the audience, we know what's going on, we're okay with this, and also might... Some of that confidence will bleed into me, the improviser. Like, well, this character feels very sure of himself, so maybe I should as well.
Yeah. Those are all great secrets that everybody is going to be dissecting.
People will be putting their feet on chairs.
Yeah, I can't wait to see a lot more putting your feet up on a chair moves happening in class shows and in shows outside the theater.
Do you have any tricks or...
No, I used to do a lot of, like, blue-collar guy eating a sandwich kind of scenes. I remember I used to do that a lot because similarly it felt like I'm doing something and I have a big choice that I just made.
Because mm-hmm. you've got a sort of character type and an attitude and a
physical
activity.
Yeah, and I think I just used to really like doing like just slow kind of blue-collar, salt-of-the-earth kind of guy scenes.
Mm-hmm.
When I was on Petrol with Dave Lombard, that's all that the two of us ever did. Was these kind of like blue collar guy scenes.
So now here's a question. Had you had a lot of experience with blue collar jobs or any experience with that?
I think I just identify with those kinds of people a lot.
Because I do feel like Dave Lombard has done some sort of construction work and things like that. So
yeah, I haven't necessarily. I've been around people who have done, like, I've worked.
Some of my best friends are blue collar.
Yeah, like I worked in a trailer on a construction site filling out all those like permit forms and shit like that. And, like, you know, my family is all, like, I have a lot of, like, construction workers and blue-collar people in my family. And I think I just identify with them and have a kind of, like, a love for them.
And I think that also might be a good thing to think about, too, though, when you're starting, again, if you're in that panic mode or the end of this show and you don't mm-hmm. know, you're not quite sure, starting with something that you're not as familiar with can be helpful. Like, if you work in an office all day and you start working in an office... I feel like your tendency is to be like, well, this is a boring thing, and I'm not that invested in this, because that's probably how you feel about your day job. It's just kind of like you're killing time versus a blue-collar sandwich-eating guy who you might not be in real life. It's kind of like, oh, this is interesting to me, or like, I need to be really alert because I don't know what's going on here, versus it's easy to kind of zone out at work. Mm-hmm. So if you play a character at work, you know, you're more likely, that's kind of, I think it's going to bleed into your performance a bit.
Putting yourself in a position where you're not necessarily comfortable, not necessarily familiar.
Yeah, and you'll find, I feel like the discoveries you'll make at the end of the show will be more interesting that way.
Yeah, and you'll get a chance to get in touch with someone that you might not be in touch with.
Are there any kinds of initiations that you cringe while watching just because you've seen them a lot?
Always the, like, well, you don't see so much of the, like, well, here we are in blank mm-hmm. kind of things. But you know what it is? It's any initiation that feels fighty. That's what it is. Like, there are a lot of initiations that just feel like they are a fight right off the bat. But I'm down for any initiation that feels clear, any initiation that gives, like, the part of any part of the basic information of, like, who, what, and where, or that summarizes, that, like, delivers the premise of the scene, if it's starting out of an opening in a Harold or any kind of form with an opening, something that, like, gives a premise right away. I love that stuff. And anything that doesn't... when it's supposed to, is stuff that's like, what are you doing?
And you know? To go back for a second, when people start with fights, you want to try to avoid that, but a tip that I give people is, like, figure out why you like each other also. You can still have an argument, but there's a difference between watching an argument between two people who love each other and are just kind of having a silly argument versus two people who hate each other, and that's what you don't want to watch. Because then it's like, why wouldn't one of them just leave? The scene doesn't make any sense, and mm-hmm. it's unpleasant to be around. Versus, you know, the sort of bickering old couple sometimes can be fun, and it's not really an argument. It's more of like, that's just how they communicate. So if you find yourself in an argument or in a disagreement, figure out also, like, well, I still, you know, love this person. This person is still my son, even though they stayed out late and that's what's going on in the scene. So that rather than just turn it into a hateful, like, I don't care about you, I'm just going to yell at you.
Right.
You have that sort of like, oh, but I do want to connect with you and reach out to you.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Because a lot of times it just feels like people are manufacturing the bullshit that they hear and see and experience throughout the day of, like, people fighting and not thinking about how much they care about each other.
Yeah, because I've been around, like, couples who fight where it's really unpleasant and you just want to leave.
Right.
And they usually break up in a few days. But then there's also those couples who have been together for a while and their fights are hilarious because they, you know, they care so much about this little detail, but you know that it doesn't matter that much.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing poker once with these two people, and they started, like, yelling at each other because one of them had, like, ran out of money. And he's like, can I borrow $5? And his boyfriend was like, no! And they just got into this really long, hilarious fight, and they were kind of drunk.
Oh, boy.
But it was, you know, you knew that it wasn't really venomous and spiteful. It was just kind of a fun interaction. And I think that sort of thing can be fun to watch, but the just venomous, spiteful fights.
Yeah. And so that it seems like what you're saying there is, like, if you're going to get into a fight with someone, you probably, or if you find yourself in a fight with someone, you probably haven't made an important choice in the scene yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you want to do is make sure that you're making a big choice.
Yeah.
Right?
Or you haven't.
Or a specific choice.
Or figure out what your relationship is in a good way.
Right. And that's what I would think that is some kind of a choice that you need to make about the scene. Because you can still argue. You can argue as long as you have game. Right? I mean, that's the thing. When you have game, you can do pretty much whatever you want within reason as long as it's in support of the game, you know? Well, those are... anything else?
Well, I just wanted to add, as this is my first time at the podcast, for those of you who are listening and are curious, when we take a break, what happens there, it's not, you know, there's not like part of it is recorded one day and then they come back.
Hey!
We're sitting around a table.
Hey!
You say, let's take a
break. You're giving away the secrets.
Somebody clicks a button on the computer. And then we start again.
Turn it off. Turn off the podcast.
Just in case you're wondering how, you know.
Why did you come in here to sabotage things?
Maybe some days there's a longer break in between there. But, you know, you get the feel like we're like going to take a break and then everyone goes home. A band comes out and plays for some reason.
I can't believe I let you in here.
There's no live in studio band. I think those are just for editing purposes, though, right? That's why you take those breaks. Because other podcasts have that.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay.
God, all the air's out of
the balloon. See if you can find, there's probably a hidden edit in this show. We had to record a part of it a second time. So now that you've finished the entire podcast, see if you can tell. Go back and listen to it a second time.
Listen to the awkward click of...
And I mean, there's one that has no music where it's just like we're going to try and splice two conversations together and see if you can figure out where we did that.
There will be a point in this podcast where two conversations were spliced awkwardly together.
And
that is true.
Next week we'll tell you the answer.
You have run roughshod over this podcast.
I'm never invited back. I'm not going to pull a Todd Bieber and get invited back again.
It's bad enough that we're now Harold Knight rivals. okay, so that is the UCB podcast for this week. Thanks to Todd Bieber. And thanks to Eric Tenoy for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. It was a pleasure. And we will be back next week with lots more podcast fun.
The UCB Theater New York podcast brought to you by a generous donation from the